Welcome to the Savvy Dentist Podcast with Dr. Jesse Green, the show where great dentistry meets great business. Listen in each week as we bring you an inspiring person who will share their story, ideas, and business techniques to help you create a practice and a life you love. And now introducing your host, Dr. Jesse Green.
Hello everyone, it's Jesse Green here. Welcome back to the Savvy Dentist Podcast and to SavvyDentist.com. It is great to have you here as always. Now this episode is episode number 300. And in this episode, we're going to be reflecting on 300 conversations that we've had over the last 5 years. Can you believe it? We've been going at this for 5 years now. We began in 2016, the early part of 2016, and we are now into March 2021 as I record this. And it's really interesting to talk about 5 years of podcasting, what's been happening in business, what's been happening in all of our lives. Of course, 5 years ago, none of us knew what was going to happen in 2020 or beyond. And of course, this episode today is going to reflect on some of those lessons over the 5 years. But of course, there's going to be a little bit of recency bias around some of that. So I'll share with you some lessons and thoughts that have come out of reflecting on these conversations that I've had. Now, before we do get into this particular podcast, it's really important that I take a moment to thank some people. First and foremost, I want to thank you, the listener. Without a listenership, there is no show. And so every week, there are thousands of people tuning into our podcast, and we've got listeners coming from all around the world. So no matter where you are, I want to say thank you. If you've ever listened to an episode of our show, I really, really want to say thank you from the bottom of my heart for tuning in and coming to hang out with us. It is a responsibility that I feel to bring you the best possible quality of content to help you on your own journey, to help you build a practice and a life that you love, not just a business, but to help you create that quality of life that we're all striving for. So really, again, just my heartfelt thanks to each of you. It really means the world to me. And as I said, it's a responsibility that I take really seriously. Now, secondly, I'd also like to say thank you to each and every person who's ever been a guest on our show. We have a lot of people who've been on our show who've come on and shared their insights, their lessons, their stories willingly and freely with the hope of sharing some insights and inspiration so that your journey might be a little easier than theirs has been. And of course, none of our guests are paid and all of our guests are thoroughly vetted before they come on, and they all possess a generosity of spirit. So without the guests, I guess there'd be a whole lot less content coming your way. So again, I'd like to say thank you to every single person who's ever been a guest. It really does mean the world to me. So the purpose of this particular episode really is to share some insights that have come up over the last 300 episodes, the last 5 years. And I'm really lucky because I get to have conversations with people who I find intensely interesting. And I get to ask some questions that I hope will add value to each of the listeners taking part as they go through their own journey. Now, as I've gone on my own journey of podcasting, I've sought to try and improve as an interviewer, to try and ask better questions, to try and dig for those pearls of wisdom or the nuggets of gold or, you know, whatever it is we're looking for. And I remember seeing Michael Parkinson interviewed. For those that don't know Michael Parkinson, he hosted a chat show for many decades out of the UK, and he spoke to lots and lots of celebrities. And then, of course, he became the subject of an interview. And someone said to him, "What makes a good show?" And his response was, it was important for the host, to be endlessly fascinated. And I reflected on that, and I thought, well, if you're a podcast host or a chat show host or any of those kind of things, it behooves us to be fascinated. And I hope that the fascination that I've had with business has somehow served you as well, because I am intensely fascinated by business. I'm intensely fascinated by human psychology, why we do the things that we do. Sometimes it is a little bit mind-boggling why we do the things that we do. Sometimes it's really insightful. And other times we'd look at those things and go, well, how can we take everything we learn and just make our lives better and richer? So of course, as I said a moment ago, we want to learn these lessons because success does indeed leave clues. And I really believe that if you listen to the interviews, if you go through the back catalog and find topics that are relevant for you, you'll find lots of pearls of wisdom that are going to help you on your journey. And of course, it's much better to learn from other people's mistakes or indeed their successes as well, because that's going to allow you to shortcut your journey. It's going to save you from making mistakes, but it's also going to save you from endless trial and error exercises where you try something and it doesn't work. And so again, we want to make sure your journey from wherever you are now to wherever you want to be is as quick, as safe, as easy, and as pleasant as possible. And as I said, so you can create a practice and a life that you love. But equally, what I really hope will come from this exercise of listening to people outside of dentistry is to gain new perspectives and to think differently about a situation, because all of us in any profession, and I believe dentistry is no different, we all tend to operate in a bit of a professional echo chamber. In other words, when we talk to dentists all day, we hear the same things over and over. And my hope and my aspiration is that you've had the opportunity to hear lots of different perspectives from different types of industries. And I hope that's given you a fresh perspective or a different way of thinking about things, because the whole show has been predicated on the idea of not invented here. And in any business that I've ever had, my best ideas have always come from looking outside that particular industry to get insight, to get inspiration, and to really look at new perspectives and bring those perspectives to whatever it is I'm doing at the time. So I hope you find that helpful too. So enough of that for now. Let's get into these lessons. 300 podcasts, there's got to be some good lessons in there. And what I wanted to do today was to really just come up with 10 lessons. Now, there are many more than 10 lessons, of course, but I thought I would pick 10 lessons that I thought were relevant for everyone. And I want to start with a lesson that comes about bouncing back from adversity. We're, of course, recording this in March 2021. We've, in Australia, come through the worst of COVID, hopefully. We're in the process of getting vaccines rolled out, and that's happening around the world as well. But I also know that not every person that listens to this is from Australia. Many people have had a much more difficult COVID experience than we have in Australia. And indeed, even in Australia, there have been lots of people who have had quite difficult experiences, particularly our friends in Victoria. So no matter where you are, no matter what your situation, the ability to bounce back from adversity, I believe, is a good skill. Now, I'm setting that, of course, against the backdrop of COVID, but that happens in any element of life. There's always going to be setbacks. There's always going to be things that punch us in the eye, give us a bit of a blood nose, a bit of a kick in the guts, and we need to have the ability to bounce back from that. And as I was reflecting on that particular topic, I was reminded of Ben Eichen. And Ben Eichen is an Australian rugby league football player, really successful, the youngest player ever to represent Queensland in the state of origin. But his career was really cut short from injury. And what I really liked about talking to Ben in that particular episode, which we first spoke to him in episode 3, I think it was, and we republished his episode a bit later on, is he spoke about, you know, having to deal with his injuries. He didn't get down in the mouth. He didn't start feeling, woe is me. He was looking down the road for other opportunities. He was able to understand that today may not necessarily be better than yesterday. In his case, it wasn't, because he kept getting injured. And he understood that life wasn't linear, and his job was to be able to think about his future while enjoying the present. So he enjoyed the training, he enjoyed the rehab, trying to get back on the field, but he was also casting his eye to what was down the road. And I think that's really important as well. So we need to be able to get through the present, but also make plans for what's going to happen after that. And many of you have heard me reference the three A's recently. And again, I just have to give credit to my friend and client, Andrew Hong, around this particular concept. He shared it with me, and that is accepting what is, adapting to the circumstances you find yourself in, and achieving whatever you can in those circumstances. So the ability to adapt to what is really key. We need to be able to see things clearly. We need to be able to adapt to those circumstances and move forward through those. So achieve what you can, plan for tomorrow, all those other sorts of things. And so the ability to bounce back from adversity is key. And that, of course, takes a bit of mental fortitude, a bit of resilience. It's also about understanding that where there's adversity, there's also opportunity. And I think that has been one of the key lessons in my life. Is sometimes going through some rubbish, going through some tough times, there's always an opportunity that is of equal or greater magnitude to the adversity that I'm currently facing. And that'll be the same for every single one of us. So again, things happen to us all. It's how we react. It's how we deal with it. And of course, being able to understand that life is not linear. Sometimes we get to a fork in the road and we've just got to be able to accept things as they are, adapt to the reality and achieve what we can. So again, bouncing back from adversity is lesson number one. And again, Ben Eichen, a case in point around that. Now, the second lesson really came from me reflecting about playing to win. And in a recent episode, I shared with you how I had the really good fortune to have some tennis coaching from former Australian great Ken Rosewall. Ken won 8 Grand Slam titles. He'd won Wimbledon. He'd won a lot of tournaments. And I was very lucky to have some coaching with him when I was a young tennis player growing up in Port Moresby in New Guinea. And one of the things that Ken taught me as a tennis player, and I think this is really true in business, is you can't win by trying not to lose. There's a big difference between winning and trying not to lose, and you can't be passive in that. And in business, I see that a lot of people are not proactive. I feel like some people really could be playing to win a bit more. And in tennis, we talk about hitting for the lines. You know, you've got to try and win. You've got to try and open up the court for opportunities. You've got to be able to hit for that line. And sometimes, of course, you might hit the ball long or make a boo-boo. And that's life, of course. But if you don't keep pushing for the win, you're never going to get the win. And that lesson came from Ken Rosewall. And he, of course, gave credit to one of his coaches when he was playing Davis Cup, the late, great Harry Holtman. And for anyone who's interested in tennis, I'd really encourage you to go and learn about Harry Holtman and Ken Rosewall as well. There's lots of great players who grew up in that vintage, that, you know, Fred Stolle, John Newcomb, Rod Laver, all of those players of that era, wonderful players, but they all won because they were trying to win and they were not being passive. They were not just trying to play defensively. And what I feel like in dentistry, apart from playing defensively or not trying to play to win, is people don't give themselves the time and the energy to think about the strategy, to open up the court, to think about how they're going to win. So again, create some time and space for you to think about that as well. So lesson number three is go slow to grow fast. And this sounds a little bit contradictory. I had the really good fortune to interview Brent Tilson, who wrote a book called Go Slow to Grow Fast, and it's a fabulous book. I really enjoyed it. It was my top book last year, and I would really encourage you, if you've not got a hold of that book, to just go out and grab a copy. It's a wonderful book. And what I really was thinking about as I was recording my notes for this episode was to understand that a lot of people really want to scale a business or to grow quickly and all those sorts of things. And the lesson that comes out of that is one where we need to understand that when we grow or when we scale, mess scales too. And so it's about really making sure that the platform is set, the runway is built, and we can grow in a measured and controlled way. Because if we grow in an uncontrolled way, if we grow in an unmeasured way, then we're going to be setting ourselves up for a lot of pain later. We will ultimately outgrow our infrastructure. We will ultimately outgrow our resources. And then we lose the ability to deliver at a high level like we had done in the past. The things that led to that growth, we begin to erode. And I guess if you think of it this way, when you're going to go to the gym and you're looking to build muscle, muscle grows in spurts. You don't grow muscle linearly. You kind of have to fatigue the muscle and let it grow in spurts. And it's the same in business. We've got to build the muscle of business. And so when we do that, we've got to understand that we've got to create enough infrastructure and grow into that. And then we're going to find that we fatigue, that we start to stretch it and to strain it. And then we're going to need to build more infrastructure again. And it's a bit like laying the road as the car's driving. We've got to make sure there's enough road for the car to drive onto. And so we've always got to be building that foundation. So in the book, Go Slow to Grow Fast, what Brent talks about is a couple of key indicators. If the culture starts to erode, you'll know that you've got some issues. If you've got this lovely culture, you start growing and the culture starts fraying, you'll start to see that. Equally, you'll see revenue per employee or indeed maybe revenue per chair starting to decrease as well. You'll start to see things not happening, balls being dropped. So again, it's really, really important to go slow to grow fast. You've got to build that platform. You've got to build that road. You've got to build that infrastructure so that you can grow into it. And again, just because I like really mixing my metaphors today, it's a bit like buying shoes for your kids. When you take your kids to get their shoes fitted, every parent I've ever met pushes their thumb onto the big toe of their child's shoe to see if there's enough room to grow into. And so what I mean by that is you've got to have enough space to grow into, but you don't want to buy shoes that are like clown feet. You don't want to have too much road or too much runway. You've got to have enough infrastructure to grow into, but not overcapitalize at the outset. If you've got a brand new practice now, a squat practice, you're not going to be building Chen chairs and fitting that out up front, right? That sounds obvious when I say it out loud, but it's just an extreme example. So go slow to grow fast. Now, lesson number four is really interesting. And what I've observed is this. No matter what the business, whether it's a dental practice, whether it's the corner store, whether it's Coles, Woolies, any type of professional service type of business, the business never, ever, ever outgrows the leaders. So what I mean by that is you can see a poorly run business be sold and have new leadership installed, and you see that business really pick up and do well. Equally, you can see a really well run business get sold and the new owners aren't as competent as the old ones, and the business basically falls back to the capability of the new leadership team. And so if we want our business to grow, first we must grow. And you might be thinking, well, that sounds really great, Jesse, but how or where must we grow? Well, I'm going to tell you it's not necessarily in your clinical work. I'm not talking about that at all. I'm talking about our ability to lead the team. The bottleneck is always at the top of the bottle. So we need to be able to grow and lead teams. We need to build a self-managing team. And to be able to have a self-managing team, we need to equip the team with the resources they need, whether that's processes and systems, clear KPIs, the training that needs to be in place. All of those things need to be in place so that the team can use those resources and really flourish. Now, that means our job is to be really, really good at helping people fulfill their potential. It means that we've got to be really, really adept at helping them understand what's required of them. And we've also got to be really adept at holding people to account, because we need to have standards and accountability. But equally, we want to make sure that we train people to think, rather than giving people answers every time they give us a question. We've got to resist that urge and learn to be better leaders by developing people's capacity. And that means when someone asks for help, the best way we can help them is by getting them to think for themselves. So if someone says, you know, Jesse, how do I do this? I might respond by saying, well, what have you come up with so far? What else could we do? What do you think might happen if we did X, Y, and Z? What risks can you see in that? Or what might I be thinking around that? So we want to be able to develop other leaders. And so the number one skill we want to work on for our business to grow is that of leadership. And that's why in the work that we do, we spend so much time on that lens of the business. We spend a lot of time on the leadership lens. We spend a lot of time helping business owners relinquish a little bit of control, but in a controlled manner, so that they can give up control to get control. They can give up control to get freedom. And of course, your ability to give up control is going to be directly proportional to the type of freedom that you enjoy. And ultimately, we're really after a couple of different freedoms in our business. We're after, obviously, financial freedom. We're after freedom of time. We're after freedom of relationship. We're after freedom of choice. And so to be able to have and enjoy those freedoms, we need to be able to grow teams, lead teams, delegate to teams, and so on and so forth. So that skill set in particular is going to be key to anyone wanting to get more from their business. So lesson number five, I've already spoken about at the outset, and that is to look outside of dentistry. This whole podcast is predicated on the idea of looking outside of dentistry. The best ideas that you'll ever have in your business will come from someone outside of dentistry. I promise you, and I guarantee it. And of course, when we think of that, the person who comes to mind is the interview I did with David Penn. David was the founder, or is the founder, of Southern Cross Dental Laboratories, and he had his inspiration looking outside of dentistry. In fact, he was looking at mail order catalogs, and he figured, if other business can use mail order, why can't we? And of course, the other thing that I would take from David Penn's interview is that success is not overnight. He was building that business in the early 1980s, long before there was an internet, long before there were really good computerized databases. He had people who were going through the yellow pages, typing in into a spreadsheet to create databases that he could then mail to and so on and so forth. So two big lessons from David. One is success takes longer than you think. You've got to work at these things. It's not an overnight success. Of course, in today's world, it's easy to think that everyone has overnight success, but that's not the case at all. And as I said a moment ago, look outside of dentistry for inspiration and ideas to help you run your practice more effectively, take it to another level, and so on and so forth. So again, David Penn is a walking, talking example of that. And many of you know, it's on the public record, that he sold a good portion of Southern Cross Dental for $100 million or thereabouts. So it's a huge amount of money to have sold that part of the business for. And he's done very well by looking outside of dentistry. So lesson number six for me is a really important lesson, and this is success is personal. Now, it's really important not to get sucked into someone else's definition of success, and it's so easy to get caught up into that definition because we all look at what's happening on Facebook, we all look at what's happening on Instagram, we start looking at everyone else's life and how amazing their life is, and of course, we measure our day-to-day existence compared to someone else's highlight reel. And their day-to-day existence was probably not that exciting either. You've got to remember that what's on social media is a highlight reel. And so it's important for you to know what's enough in your life. What does success really mean in terms of your relationships, in terms of your finances, in terms of your time, in terms of your relationship with friends and family, in terms of everything going on in your life, your health, your well-being, so on and so forth. And I had a really good conversation with James Schramko, and I've known James for, it must be a dozen or so years now. When I first was interested in internet marketing, James was getting started in his journey too. And I spoke at length with James on the show. We're talking about, yeah, every day he likes to go surfing. And for him, he's created a business around his lifestyle rather than a lifestyle around his business. And I think that's an important differentiation. There's a lot of dentists I know that try and fit their lifestyle in around their production. I can't do this today because I've got to spend 9 to 5 or 8 to 5 drilling, filling, and billing. And that, you know, that's one way of looking at things. It's not the only way of looking at things. I'm going to encourage you to look at what you want to put into your day to make it really worthwhile and make your business fit around you. And James is the example that comes up with that. As I said, surfing every day. He lives at Manly Beach in Sydney. He gets up and he likes to surf first thing in the morning. And that's his ritual. That's his thing. And in the afternoon, he likes to have a nap every day. And of course, you might say, well, that's all good for someone else, but I couldn't possibly do that. My patients would never tolerate it. And I'm going to say, well, why not? Why not do that? Why not create a business that's around your activities? Why not create a routine that fits in with you? Maybe you want to be the dad or the mum that takes kids to school every single day. I know that for many years, I was the only dad that was taking kids to school. Why not create a life around your own activities? You can do that and your patients will fit in. You don't have to fit in with everyone else's wishes all the time. So I'd really encourage you to think about, you know, what are the things that are important to me and how do I create success on my terms? Because it's all good to have them all the money in the world and all that sort of stuff, but if you're not spending time with your family or building relationships or creating memories, then what's it all for? So my humble suggestion to you is to start thinking about what makes your life rich and meaningful, what gives you purpose. What are the things that you really enjoy, and incorporate some of that stuff on a day-to-day basis for yourself, because ultimately you don't want to kind of get to the end of your life and think, man, what was that all about? And I'd really encourage you to think about that. So yeah, that's a really big one. Maybe I should have put that as number one, but it could certainly be number one. And I should point out that these lessons are in no way hierarchical. So, but that is an important one. So lesson number seven comes from a conversation I had with Glenn Carlson. And Glenn is, again, someone I've known for probably 8 or 9 years now, and he's a really smart entrepreneur. He's one of the co-founders of the Dent Group. And I reflected on one particular phrase from a podcast I did with him. And in Glenn's episode, we were talking about crossing the desert where he was scaling up. You know, you can create a lifestyle business, which is what I was just talking about a moment ago, or you can really scale up. And we were talking about the circumstances in which you operate, and you've got to be mindful of that. And a phrase he had in there was, sail the wind you've got. And I really liked it. And he comes from a sailing background. He spent a lot of his youth sailing around the world with his mum and dad. And his family always used to say, look, you've got to sail the wind. You've got to be stuck in the doldrums up around the equator for a while. And if there's no wind, there's no wind. You're just going to take the time you take until you get to the other side. And so I guess that ties in with getting real about the circumstances you're operating in. Don't wish it was something else. Don't pretend it's something else. Most certainly don't pretend it's something else. You've got to be realistic about what's actually happening, not what you want it to be, not what you think it is, or not what you wish it to be, but getting real about what it actually is. And you've got to be able to sail the wind you've got. You've got to be able to deal with the circumstances at hand and to play the cards you've been dealt. So again, I think that's a really important lesson. Lesson number 8 is, I guess, tying into something we spoke about the very first lesson, and that is the ability to adapt to change. And of course, even I spoke in lesson 1, which was dealing with adversity, and I spoke about the ability to adapt in that, but I want to talk about this as a separate concept, the ability to adapt to change, because our marketplace has been changing rapidly over the last 10, 12 years. You know, in 2007, before the GFC, it was a very different environment to what it is now. There was virtually no competition. There was an oversupply of patients and undersupply of dentists. The biggest challenge people had was finding enough dentists to come and work for them. Capacity was an issue. Wait lists were an issue. Quite frankly, if you couldn't make money as a dentist in those days, there was something really wrong with you. You didn't need to be a good business person. And of course, the circumstances have changed very dramatically since then. And the ability to run a business, I believe, is a key skill set that every single practice owner needs to have now. So you've got to be able to keep your nose to the wind, to understand what the changes are coming down the pipeline, the ability to see around corners, as they say. And so, you know, you've got to be able to see change coming, because when there's change coming, you'll identify opportunities. And when you think about this, you know, to look at a different business example around this, it was the digitization of photography. And Kodak thoroughly missed that opportunity. They thoroughly misunderstood the importance of digital photography, even though they were the ones who had first invented the digital camera. They had all this technology and they didn't see the trend and they missed it. And of course, companies like Apple or other Fujifilm cameras, digital cameras and others, they got it. Now, particularly Apple got it because they incorporated it into phones. Other companies that missed it were BlackBerry and others that just didn't see the trend coming. They weren't able to adapt. And of course, we understand Darwin's law, which is not so much survival of the fittest, it's the survival of those that can adapt to changing environments. And we see this all the time in business. The ones that can cope with change, identify change, adapt to change are the ones that are going to see it. And if you can see that ahead of time, you'll find that there is a lot of opportunity. There is a ton of change coming. So you've got to be able to keep your nose to the wind, see what's coming, and capitalize on those opportunities and really understand that. So again, in order to see those opportunities, I'm going to tie this back to thinking outside of the business, thinking outside of dentistry, to read widely, to understand what the general business trends are, to think about what's happening in the world of offshoring. Can I use that to my advantage? Can I use the remote workforce to my advantage? All those sorts of trends are happening around the world. They've been happening for ages, but in dentistry, people haven't picked up on that. That's just an example of what sort of trends you could pick up on and how to use those within your own business. So again, that's lesson number 8. Be able to identify change, adapt to that change, and to capitalize on that change. So lesson number 9 is to be a training institution. And so what I mean by that is we, as a business, in my view, need to become very adept at taking people and training them so that they become really proficient in their roles as quickly as we possibly can. And of course, Richard Branson had that great saying of train your people so well they could get a job anywhere and treat them so well that they'll never leave. And so, of course, we want to be able to train people up really, really well. And where I'm going with this, particularly with clinical staff for a moment, is that my view is that most experienced clinicians are probably quite settled in their roles. Now, of course, there'll be some changing around here and there, But I believe that if you want to add capacity to your practice, if you want to be able to increase the number of operators that you have, if you want to be able to add more patients to the patient base, we're going to need to be able to service more patients with more operators, then we're going to need to have a very important training function where we take young and recent graduates, whether they're dentists or whether they're therapists, whatever is the mix for your practice, and help them become proficient in their roles as quickly as possible. So in order to do that, we need to be very adept at training. We need to have a robust onboarding process and a robust training process. We need to build out what I call an earn and learn program. And I had this idea when I was a young dentist in the Navy. So in 1991, as an undergraduate in second year, I'm dating myself there, folks. For anyone listening, you'll be doing the maths on that. But in 1991, I approached Defence Force Recruiting looking to have a scholarship with the Navy. And when I went into the recruiting center, what they said was, look, here's the package that you need to read. If you want to be a dentist, here's what it is. You know, as a new graduate dentist or as an undergraduate dentist, you're going to earn this, you're going to learn this, these are your responsibilities and so on. But as a new grad dentist, you know, you're going to earn X number of dollars. And in year one, you're going to learn how to do A, B, and C. In year two, you're going to earn Y dollars and you're going to learn how to do X, Y, Z. All of those sorts of things. So I really believe that we need to formalize this process in our practice so that if we're looking to attract the best and brightest minds within dentistry, then we want to build out what I call an earn and learn package and be really adept at getting people up to speed. And so what we're talking about is really taking someone who's a bit of a rookie and helping them become a pro in a shorter period of time as possible. And of course, I understand that people are going to say, yeah, but if I train them and they leave, I've got to go through that whole process again. And of course, you would have heard the answer to that, of course, which is, what if you don't train them and they stay? That's, I think, a really sobering thought. What if you don't train them and they stay? And so we want to be able to build out that training process for all of your team members, for every single team member, whether they're a dentist, a therapist, front desk, DAs, whatever it happens to be. But the ability to bring people up to speed quickly, I believe, is going to be a competitive advantage moving forward. So that is the training institution. So the mindset we have is that we are a training institution. Yes, we're a dental practice, but first and foremost, we are indeed a training institution. Now, lesson number 10, as I reflected on 300 conversations, as I said, there's more than 10 lessons, but let's talk about lesson number 10, and that is to build assets. I really, really want to talk about the importance of building assets because if we're going to build assets into the business, we need to understand this concept. And the concept is that income follows assets. And putting it simply, every headache, frustration, deficiency, pain in the neck, burr in the saddle, all of that sort of stuff can be traced back somewhere to a deficiency of assets. So if you don't have enough patients, we don't have enough marketing assets. If your team aren't operating properly, we don't have enough training assets. If your team are not able to do the job to the highest level, then again, we don't have enough assets. If we find that our case presentation is not being accepted, we don't have enough assets. All of those sorts of things can be traced back to assets. Now, there's four types of assets we talk about in a practice. We talk about the intellectual property assets, of course, which I'm referring to there. But there's also physical assets. So if we can't fit patients in, we have a capacity issue, which is a lack of physical assets. If we don't have enough patients, we don't have a database that's big enough. So it's a database asset. And of course, if we don't have enough team, we have an HR asset. So again, four types of assets, the physical assets, the team assets, the database assets, and of course, the intellectual property assets. So those are the four main assets. So our job is to take the assets of our business and convert those assets into revenue. From there, we convert that revenue into profit. And from that profit, we turn that into free cash flow. And free cash flow is really, really important. Through COVID, that lesson was learned again in a very harsh way by many businesses. And I'm sorry that they had to learn that. But the lesson is that cash flow is the oxygen that keeps the business alive. Without that cash flow, businesses quite simply die. They fail. And so our job is to build assets and turn those assets into cash flow. Once we've got that free cash flow, we can do three things with them. We can either take that cash flow and reduce debt, or we can take that cash flow and distribute it to the owners as a dividend, or we can take that cash flow and reinvest in more assets and rinse and repeat that cycle. But the efficiency with which we can convert assets into cash flow is a really important measure of business effectiveness. And so how well we can take those assets and turn that into cash flow is really, really important. We want to take the assets and as quickly as possible, as effectively as possible, turn that into cash flow and then use that cash flow in the three ways I described. So our job as business owners is to be forever building assets and then what I call sweating those assets. We've got to take that asset and turn it into cash flow. So rather than trying to always add more, we always have to firstly look at getting the most out of what we've currently got. So that is a key thing. Build the assets, get everything you can out of the assets, and then of course build more as you go. So asset creation is a fundamental thing for business owners to focus on, and it is predicated on the understanding that income follows assets. And if you think about that from a P&L perspective and a balance sheet perspective, we know that to be true as well. So income follows assets. So ladies and gents, there's 10 lessons that I hope you find helpful on your journey. It's been really good fun to go back through the back catalog of 300 episodes, and it's been an impossible task to come up with just 10 lessons, of course, but they're 10 lessons that I thought would be helpful, 10 lessons that I hope that if you apply them in your own business, it'll help accelerate your journey to where you want to go, to create a practice that you love, to create a life that you love, whatever that means for you, because as I said earlier, success is indeed personal. So I hope you find those lessons really helpful. Once again, if you are a dental practice owner and you enjoy these types of lessons, please come and join us in the Savvy Dentist Facebook group. I've got a ton of stuff I'd like to share with you there. It is a group for practice owners only. So if you're not a practice owner, we'd love to welcome you there once you are a practice owner. Of course, there's lots of things we can support you with there. If you want to grab our high performance dental practice report, head across to savvydentist.com and download it. There's a ton of resources there, guys. So please avail yourself of them. And I would love to help and support you on your journey. So once again, thank you to each and every single one of you who has ever listened to one of our podcast episodes. It really does mean the world to me. I get from time to time some nice emails and feedback, and I thank each of you who have taken the time to give me that feedback as well. And of course, if there's topics you'd like to hear about or things you'd like to know, please do let me know as well. I'm more than happy to bring that to you. But that's it for me for now. I look forward to seeing you on the next episode of the Savvy Dentist Podcast. So take good care. And we'll see you next time. Bye now.
Thank you for listening to the Savvy Dentist Podcast with Dr. Jesse Green. For more free tools and resources, join the free Facebook group. Visit drjessegreen.com/Facebook. And for more episodes, visit drjessegreen.com/Savvy Dentist.